This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Mark Haney. Later in today's show, we'll take a look at Ohio's next two-year budget. But first, the seven-story homage to Cincinnatus mural on the north-facing side of the Kroger headquarters downtown is undergoing a full restoration. Artworks and the Thomas Melvin Studio are doing the restoration project. Artist Richard Haas was commissioned by Kroger to paint that mural in 1983 to honor the company's 100-year anniversary. Richard Haas is in Cincinnati to review restoration progress of Homage to Cincinnatus, and he joins us in the studio to discuss his work. You can join the conversation at 513-419-7100, email talk at wvxu.org, or find us on Facebook or Twitter. Richard, very good to see you this afternoon. Thank you for being here.
Well, thank you for inviting me.
Do you ever have people tell you when they see Cincinnatus that they want to climb the stairs, or they actually want to go up and touch the columns? I mean, that's what's going through my head when I see it. It's so real looking.
Well, I hope they don't, first of all.
Okay.
But, you know, at least they're getting into the act, as it were, you know, because they're part of it.
Mm-hmm. Now, as you were growing up, what was it like for you? Did your family have an influence on your artistic career?
Well, neither of my parents were artists as such, nor was anyone else in the immediate family. However, they had a great sense of craft. They were all Germans, and I have a German background. And, of course, my father and mother, on their wedding trip in 1931, I believe, traveled to Germany, brought back a whole series of postcards, and a lot of them were of those painted buildings in southern Germany. And I remember as a little kid seeing them, and that was probably my first influence on painted architecture.
And your father was a stonemason, wasn't he? So he had a little bit to do with the building industry.
Well, no, actually, my great uncle was a stonemason.
Okay.
And my grandfather was a stonemason who I never met. So there was stonemasonry in the family for at least 200 years. And of course, my great uncle had a great influence on me as well, because he was Frank Lloyd Wright's stonemason.
Well, I was going to say, your neighborhood you grew up in was not far from the community where Frank Lloyd Wright lived. What was his influence on you in your younger days?
Well, I think it was central to a lot of things. He was literally 2 miles from where I was born, south of us. We'd see him as a little kid. He'd come in and out of town. It was always an occasion. But when I was 19, my great uncle was now, his stonemason had been for almost 20 years, and he invited me to come over and work with him as a kind of a ersatz apprentice for 2 summers, 55 and 56. And he said, and of course you can freely roam, which is mostly what I did. I roamed freely around Taliesin and especially the drafting rooms, and I saw pretty much everything that was going on over that two-year period.
So there was a point where you thought you were going to be an architect, is that right?
I was definitely heading in that direction. What happened, though, is that the state of Wisconsin didn't have an architecture school at that time, and I, of course, had to do a state school. I would never have been able to afford to go outside of the state. And so I was probably saved by the bell, as it were, because the architecture school opened about 5 years after I graduated from UWM in Milwaukee.
So if that school had been open any sooner, you might have been an architect instead of an artist.
I might be sitting here for a very different interview, or not. Who knows?
Now, what kind of art were you doing before you started doing these building murals? What kinds of things were you doing?
Well, I mean, there was a long period of time before I actually started doing the outdoor murals. I was an abstract painter for almost 10 years. My first two shows in New York were of large abstract paintings, for one thing. I was teaching printmaking first at Michigan State and then later at Bennington College in Vermont. And when I was teaching printmaking, especially doing a lot of etchings, I started to look at buildings. And I started making etchings of the facades of buildings. And in the neighborhood I was living in was later called Soho. And, of course, I was doing those cast iron facades. And I think that led in a kind of a 1-2-3-step way to my deciding to take those facades and put them on walls.
Now, you were talking about the postcards that came from Europe that showed a lot of this building art. Was that part of what originally inspired you to start doing these illusory types of murals that actually look like they're part of a building?
Well, I think it was one of the things. There were so many others that kind of fell into place as well. I mean, I did start traveling to Europe and seeing, you know, firsthand, not just the works that I started seeing as postcards in southern Germany, but also northern Italy and all the way down into Rome. And of course, there is a whole major tradition where it really came from the Renaissance, you know.
Now, how far back does this tradition date?
I don't think there's a date you could put on it, but I would say if you go back into the Roman period, and who knows before that, because it's all lost, we're going back to 1200 BC.
So the ancient Greeks and the ancient Romans, and they all had an influence on this, and it's been a tradition to this day.
It was one of their main ways of decorating buildings on the interiors. I don't know how much exterior work was done, because that was certainly lost, but there is still extant, especially if you go to a place like Pompeii or even in some of the parts of Rome. You can see today entire buildings, interiors of buildings painted with what we call, in their great Italian phrase, quattratura, painted buildings.
Well, then the French had a term, did they not, for this type of art, too?
Well, the French always get in there. Yeah, they called it trompe l'oeil.
Trompe l'oeil.
Fool the eye.
Fool the eye, which is exactly what it does. We were talking earlier about how you look at Cincinnatus and you think, well, you could actually walk up and touch that. The stairs look real and the columns look real.
A great technique that comes, as I said, all the way back from even before the Greeks and Romans, because if you look at Egyptian work, you see it there as well. So it's I think, a Western tradition of the first order.
When did you start doing your outdoor art? You've been doing abstract art up to that point. When was it that you first started doing these outdoor murals?
The very first one was really about late December of 74 in Soho. And it was a facade about a block from my studio. And I walked by it every day, and I started making drawings of it along with some other sites in Soho, and took them to a person who started a thing called City Walls, and showed them to this person, Doris Friedman, and said, she looked at all my drawings, and I had two photographs, one before, one after. And as she looked at them, she would say, "Well, Richard, which one should we do?" And that's how I became a public artist.
Wow. So did you feel like this was an opportunity for you to do something that was larger than just studio art?
I was thinking about it, obviously, for a few years, yes. And I think it just kind of gelled. The time was right. The environment was. My own skills, I think, had reached the point where I knew kind of where I wanted to take it. And you have to remember, the 70s was a very unusual and very brutal period in city history.
Yeah, a lot of turmoil in the cities, a lot of...
Physical and otherwise. And, the cities were ravaged.
And you felt like this was an opportunity to help improve things?
Absolutely. Yeah, I did. And I think that, you know, every artist who was interested in some public venue had another idea. It was a very fertile period.
Now, how many cities have you done your work in?
Oh, I haven't counted them.
Now, how about some examples of cities where you've done your work?
Well, Chicago became a very early and important one. New York, of course. Then there was Philadelphia. There was Los Angeles. There was Miami. Texas.
Okay.
Those are a few.
Okay. And what are some examples of some of the things you've done? I've seen Cincinnatus. I've seen a few of the other works. They're mm-hmm. all incredible. But can you give us some examples of other things?
Well, I was particularly happy when I did the first one in Chicago, because it was a 20-story building that I could paint on three sides.
And, wow.
It faced north and south down LaSalle Street, which was an important street. And then it faced east to a neighborhood at that time that was kind of marginal, but getting better. And so it gave me an opportunity to reshape a building as such. And so what I did is I called it an homage to Chicago School of Architecture, because I was very familiar with it. And so I had Sullivan influence, Burnham influence, Richardsonian influence, and of course, Frank Lloyd Wright.
And you did all three sides. That sounds like that was a pretty vast task. Did it take teamwork to do this? Did you have people help you do it? Or
I had a, a subcontractor who painted a lot of my early ones, Evergreen Studios. And they were the group that painted the first mural here. But, of course, on that crew was Tom Melvin. Tom, living in Chicago at the time, became part of that crew. And he also went back to repaint that mural 5 years ago. So it's been refurbished.
Mm-hmm. So you've been called the building doctor. You think that's you still feel like that's a term that fits with the work that you're doing?
Well, I'm not sure that I want to necessarily be called a doctor. I didn't get an honorary doctorate yet, but I certainly see that it's a way of, you know, patching and fixing the city.
So when you tackle a process that is this massive, be it Cincinnatus, be it what you did in Chicago, what are the steps that you take before you actually start working on that building?
The first thing you do, of course, is, I think Aaron Copland once said, is get the contract. And he said that's always the hardest step. But once you do that, and, you know, Kroger being a wonderful patron in that way, you go and work on the design. You try to get measurements. You try to get photographs. And then you start to research the history of the area. And I think you put all that together in some way or another, so that you can, you know, really focus on something that I think fits like a glove, you know, into that space.
What kind of considerations do you have to take? Do you take safety into account on doing these and other logistical issues?
Well, the good news there is I do subcontract with other what I consider talented and professional artists who know how to work with this. And I do make sure they follow the rules. And the person in charge is the one totally responsible for that. But yes, there are very, you know, step-by-step safety rules that you have to follow.
Out of everything you've done, do you have a favorite?
I don't think so. I mean, this trip I've been taking out here allowed me to pass through two of my favorites already. One was in Pittsburgh a couple of days ago, and it looked great. And then the other is the one here, and then I'll be passing up through Cleveland, where I'm going to go and see another interior I did of a library. So as I travel, I kind of check in on them, as it were.
You can join our conversation with Richard Haas at 513-419-7100. And we'll continue our talk with him after this. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Mark Haney. My guest this afternoon is Richard Haas, the artist who created the Cincinnatus mural. You can join us at 513-419-7100, email talk at wvxu.org, or find us on Facebook or Twitter. How did you get the Cincinnatus contract? Was the mural the Kroger's idea? Did they want Cincinnatus from the beginning, or is that something that you suggested?
When Kroger contacted me, they did so through their architect who was redoing that building at the time. And the good news is they were very generous in saying that it was really a carte blanche that they were offering me, you know, the wall as such. They didn't have any stipulations. And I came up with the concept, of course.
So why Cincinnatus?
Well, I looked into the history a little bit and realized that, you know, Cincinnati had a unique history in how it was named. And, you know, the fact that it had this very unusual moment around 1800, slightly before, when George Washington started the Society of the Cincinnati. And it seemed like a terrific concept, really. And his idea, of course, was that he was modeling himself after Cincinnatus, who was a farmer who turned general, saved Rome, and then retreated back to the farm. And that's how Washington wanted to visualize himself. And so he started the society. And I think Cincinnati picked up on that.
So when it comes to doing these murals, that's a common strategy. You go on, you look at the particular site. That's mm-hmm. part of what inspires you. And then you look at the history surrounding the site.
So yes.
That's how you come up with these.
And the building.
And the building itself.
Yeah.
How much does that play into your considerations?
Well, a lot.
Yeah.
Really. I mean, and the building is the first key. That's your canvas. And then, you know, how it's seen, that's your second impetus, that's the audience. And the third, of course, is whatever you can sort of key on into from the building and from the surroundings. In this case, the building wrapped slightly around the very wall that I was addressing. And so that started the process of how to deal with the building. And I said, well, if the left quarter of the building has this incredible wrap of what the front facade looks like, why can't I repeat that on the right side? And once I had that, I really had a stage set, you know, kind of like the proscenium of a stage. And then I started feeding into it ideas of how would I think about this Cincinnatus? Well, of course, Roman architecture came into play. Well, how did Roman architecture fit into the mold of this building per se? And, you know, kind of one thing led to another. And I happen to be a collector of prints and other artifacts, and I have about 25 Piranesi prints. And one of the Piranesi prints gave me the idea. I said, wow, that might work. So it started with that.
Now, what kind of reaction have you gotten to Cincinnatus through the years? What do people tell you about it?
Well, it seemed, I mean, I haven't been back to really, you know, check the local feel for it, but I've had some people send me stories and so on, and it seems to have caught that spirit to some degree. And I think people, quote unquote, get it. They see that as a connection, you know. Oh, yes, the building, the arch, the Roman history, and, oh, what's that smoke doing there? And, you know, then they start asking questions. And that's part of what I'm after, is a little sort of uncertainty, a little ambiguity, all of that.
Well, the smoke is an interesting aspect of the mural. What was your thought when you were putting that in there?
Well, because it is a sort of very monumental, you know, piece an inserted kind of concave space. Very often they were sacred spots, and very often they were burning incense and, you know, honoring what that site was about. And of course, that was part of what I was trying to do as well. So I said, why not have smoke coming out of the center of that archway? And why not, you know, having it fly up through that large opening in the dome, which is really not that different from the Pantheon, of course. And then I can freeze smoke in the sky. I said in one case, that's something you can't do in other paintings.
So how long did it take to finish Cincinnatus?
Well, in the first go around, I think it was probably about a 3.5 month on-site process. And we had a filmmaker actually recording it at the time. Her name was Amelie Rothschild, and she did a 55-minute PBS film for it. It was called Painting the Town.
Do you expect it to do this well, to hold up this well, before it needed to be refurbished?
I would hope that it would have held up even better. I think part of the problem was no painting is ever better than the surface it's on. And if the surface is perfect, the painting will be there 100 years. If the surface is totally lousy, it'll be there a year at best. So that's the range.
Let's talk with Craig in Clifton. Hi, Craig.
Hey there. So two quick questions. One, I have a friend named Jeff Zimmerman in Chicago that does murals, and it occurred to me to wonder if you guys ever coordinate as muralists, or do you just see one that pops up and say, oh, that's interesting. I mean, you know in advance. And then second question, I'm curious, now that you're back in Cincinnati after a few years, what do you think, if you have any analysis of our current collection of murals, which are proliferating, as you know?
Okay. Thanks, Craig.
Yeah, thank you. Well, certainly your town has changed. It's come a long way. I have to congratulate you. And your mural program, I think, is off to a tremendous, I wouldn't call it start, but, you know, it's very lively and very ongoing, and the work is great. It seems to be getting better and better. So I congratulate you on that as well. Because when I came here, there were maybe two or three murals that were fading already. And that was it.
Do muralists collaborate together, as Craig was asking?
I haven't really collaborated as such. I mean, I have worked with other artists in different ways. But collaboration is always a complicated thing, as you might gather,
yeah.
With artists. So I'm not sure what you mean by that, but I've certainly had a lot of, you know, back and forth and conversation along these years with other muralists.
You ever work with the architects hand in hand as you're doing these?
I've had a lot of experience with architects, maybe more than most other mural painters, because my work is architectural. And sometimes they can be your best friend, and sometimes they can be somewhat interruptive. And I have had some interesting experiences, that would be the best way to put it, when architects try to put their two cents in. But more often than not, they've been the kind of ally that kind of work between myself and, say, the developer who owns the building. And they've been very good that way.
Now, you also do interior pieces. It's not just exterior work and
yes.
that have the same illusory effect as though they're actually part of the building. Did that whole thing start off as you were fixing damage to a what a burglar did to your studio in New York? Wasn't that the story behind that?
That's how I got into mural painting, really. Yeah, I lived in Soho in the early days. It was a pretty rough neighborhood around it. And somebody broke into my studio by chopping a hole in the stairwell area, and it went right through where my kitchen was. And I said, well, patching it up, I said, well, I better paint a doorway next time. That was how it started. And so then I said, well, wait, as long as I paint that, why can't I just add some stuff on the other side? And then I painted a balcony so I could look over the city. And then it went around the room.
Yeah, Cincinnati is such a great example of your work. What are you doing to restore that? What exactly is being done to it?
Well, we're doing mostly trying to be as faithful as we can to the original. But there were always things that bothered me a little. You know, some curves that weren't quite right, some capitals that could have been embellished better. And then the statue of Cincinnati that I felt needed a little improvement. So I'm putting a little more beef on him. He needs that for your winters, you know, and, you know, stuff of that nature.
Yeah. Who else is doing this kind of art, Richard? As we were talking about earlier, this type of art dates so far back. It's such a tradition.
Yeah.
So besides yourself, who else is out there to carry on this tradition?
Well, there are tremendous painters all over the world, really, now. I mean, I started being close to two painters, one in Paris and one in California. One, and unfortunately, both of them are gone now, but one was Terry Schoonhaven in L.A., who started the L.A. Art Squad, and Fabio Raiti, who I think is retired or maybe, you know, much older. He did some great works in Paris, right near the Beaubourg. Those were two of the early ones. And you know, since then, there's been a tremendous tradition.
And how long before the restoration's done on Cincinnati?
I just talked to Tom about that, and he says if it doesn't rain too much, he hopes to be done in about 2.5 months.
Richard, thank you for joining us this afternoon.
Okay, well, thank you.
Artist Richard Haas, who created the Cincinnati mural. Richard will be talking more about the Cincinnati restoration at 5:30 today at the 21C Museum Hotel. On July 7th, there will be a screening of a documentary about his work at the Mini Micro Cinema. And there are links to those events at WVXU.org. Up next, we'll look at the new Ohio budget that Governor John Kasich plans to sign tonight. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU.